Marty Moscowane, welcome to Radio Times. A few weeks ago, Rick Santorum was beating Mitt Romney in Michigan, which was a must-win primary state for the former Massachusetts governor. Romney and his well-heeled supporters poured nearly $4.5 million into TV ads, many of them negative and aimed squarely at Santorum. Last night, Romney beat the former Pennsylvania senator, although not by much. Romney had better luck in Arizona, where he took almost half of the votes. Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul came in a distant third and fourth in both states. The next GOP showdown is next week, Super Tuesday, when 11 states will hold primaries and or caucuses. It's been a bruising campaign that's revealed deep divisions within the Republican Party. And although President Obama's popularity has been on the rise, he has his vulnerabilities. We've invited two political media strategists to join us today in Radio Times, and they are with us here in our Philadelphia studios. Neil Oxman is head of the campaign group. And Neil, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. And Chris Mottola, head of Chris Mottola Consulting Incorporated. And Chris, nice to have you back as well.
Always a pleasure.
Let me begin with you, Chris, and actually begin with Mitt Romney. Can he relax after these two wins last night?
No, he can't. He can relax after Super Tuesday, maybe. It's been a very different campaign this year. And, you know, this is the shape of future things. With the, you know, super PACs now in, and with different states truncating and changing the typical dates of primaries, it's made it very difficult for any candidate to get any momentum. To put it in perspective, before yesterday, at this point in 2008, and I worked for John McCain,
yes.
And in 2008, over half the states had already voted. As of, you know, before yesterday, only nine have.
Which shows that it's a very different climate atmosphere for the Republicans.
It's the long march.
It's a long march. Do you think the march that will take them into the summer and to the convention, is there any way to predict where this will go?
Yeah, I mean, I do know, and, you know, I've gotten contact from, there's a consortium of, you know, what I'm going to call superdelegates and former governors who say, gee, you know, if we get a candidate who thinks going to, like, give away the show, let's talk about a brokered convention, and would you be interested in doing that?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, kind of fun.
Well, I want to pick up on that. Neil, as you look at the Republicans and you work for Democrats, what do you see?
Well, I think in the end, the question is, what will Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum do? I don't know how well they will do next week. Right now, Santorum's ahead in Ohio. I assume he will probably win Oklahoma. I don't know where else he's going to win. I don't know what's going to happen in the caucuses. Interestingly, in Virginia, neither Gingrich or Santorum are even on the ballot.
And this is also part of Super Tuesday.
And so if Santorum and Gingrich want to drag this thing out for a long time and Ron Paul and stay on the ballot, then they're going to continue to define. This campaign, the Republican primary so far, has been this in every state with the exception of Florida and New Hampshire. It's been a referendum on how conservative Mitt Romney is, and is he conservative enough? And that's what the debate has been, which is bad for Romney, bad for the Republicans, and also good for Obama because it takes away the focus on Obama. And if they want to continue to do that, even though they're maybe not pulling ahead in the delegate race, they can do this for a long time. The question is, at what point? And both of them have egos, and they're individuals that you really have to massage.
Sure.
Do those guys say, all right, enough is enough, we've made our point, and focus 35 weeks and 6 days from now, which is the general election, instead of trying to beat this guy to death?
Let me quote something that Jeb Bush said recently, and he said, I used to be a conservative, and I watch these debates, and I'm wondering, I don't think I've changed, but it's a little troubling sometimes when people are appealing to people's fears and emotions rather than trying to get them to look over the horizon for a broader perspective. And Chris, I think that speaks to some deep concerns, even beyond the divisions, but concerns within the Republican Party about its future and its ability to win, if not this election, maybe other elections.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And when I referenced earlier that there, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, if it's a Gingrich or it's a Santorum, you know, we're going to have a brokered convention. But to put the, you need, you know, roughly, you know, 1,144 votes to be the Republican nominee for president. As of today, Mitt Romney's got 163 and Santorum has like 82 or 83.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long way to go.
And do you think, is Jeb Bush one of those people that is seen by these people that you're talking to as a kind of savior for the party?
You know, if his name wasn't Jeb Bush, he would be the nominee. But there's no way we're going to do Bush, Bush, Bush. But it may be another governor. And, you know, governors,
like a Chris Christie?
I don't think a Chris Christie.
Mitch Daniels?
Maybe Mitch Daniels. Mm-hmm.
The governor of Indiana.
Right. Although he didn't want to run because apparently he didn't want to drag his family through it.
Right. And who can blame him? I mean, this is, you know, a horrific process, and it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Let me turn to you, Neil. We're in Pennsylvania, and Rick.
By the way, the question you brought up, the quote about Jeb Bush, and this is interesting because we're here. And given what happened to Arlen Specter 2 years ago, I would be interested in knowing, mythically, whether if John Hines were a Republican today, whether the Republican Tea Party people would have forced him out of the Republican Party in Pennsylvania. I mean, I always ask that question just to have people think about it, because he was a truly a liberal Republican. And whether the great icon Hines here in Pennsylvania, you know, who stood for everything good and his family stood for everything good, would have been forced out of the Republican primary, given on what Jeb Bush just said.
Well, interestingly, Olympia Snowe has decided not to run for re-election, in part because she just feels as if it's such a toxic, poisonous atmosphere in Congress or even in her own party.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my joke is I've been, you know, personally decimating the moderate ring of the Republican Party.
It's your fault, Chris.
Yeah, it's my fault. You know, I work with Arlen Specter and Lincoln Chafee, and, you know, I kind of do the moderate Republicans. Mm. And it's very difficult to win a primary, and the problem is that the primary sucks so much money and energy out of you. You are in poor shape, if not financially. Certainly, you know, I know from a consultant standpoint, emotionally, to do the general.
Yeah.
And you run out of gas.
Well,
I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. Let me ask you, though, about Rick Santorum. And this is a partisan question because you're a Democrat, Neil, and you work for Democratic candidates. But Rick Santorum served 2 terms as senator here in Pennsylvania. What do you make of his appeal? And I have to say, even a couple of months ago, I remember saying on this show, when all the other not Mitt Romney's had fallen by the wayside, it seemed to me that Rick Santorum had the credentials that would appeal to evangelicals, social conservatives. What do you make of his candidacy?
Well, I mean, when you had everybody else in order, you had the congresswoman from
You don't
Minnesota.
Even remember her name.
No, I do. You know, and then you had Rick Perry, who was the nominee, and then you had Herman Cain 999, and then you had Gingrich, and now you have Santorum, and clearly Santorum had, as you said, had real credentials to do that. If Rick Santorum were about 20% less crazy and goofy things that he said, and for instance, last night. For people who are listening, if they watched CNN last night, CNN did something really extraordinary. CNN had a bunch of independent, undecided Republican voters in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio, hooked up to people meters. And when Romney and Santorum gave their speeches last night, the people meters, which had blue for men and pink for women, where you could see the lines going up and down. And most of Santorum's speech last night was, first of all, he praised his working mother and his working wife instead of doing goofiness. And then he talked about economic issues. Well, he was above the line. He was above the median the whole time. Chris knows Santorum, and I know him I'm one of the reasons Santorum is in Congress, having lost the first race for him.
That's
your
fault,
I take some of the blame. But
I hear you.
He's stubborn and he's principled and he says things. But in America, to say that reading John Kennedy's speech before the Baptist ministers in Houston in 1960, quote, almost made him throw up. I mean, that's arguably one of the 10 great speeches of the 20th century, maybe in the history of the Republic, because it clearly laid out the separation between church and state. I will tell you this. If Rick Santorum, given the fact that he has bona fides that are much better bona fides on the social issues than Mitt Romney, if he just laid those out in one paragraph and stayed on all the economic issues and talked about populism and taking back big government, all that stuff, he would make Barack Obama miserable. but there's something about him that goes over. You did a show last week about Santorum.
We did.
And there's something that goes over. That he says goofy things.
Well, let me pick up on that and turn to you, Chris Mottola, because he has talked about Satan, and one believes that he believes that Satan is a true threat, not a metaphoric threat on the United States. He's talked about Hitler. He called the president a snob because the president talked about getting some kind of skill training or education beyond high school. Has he gone too far? But he certainly has appealed to a certain kind of Republican voter, but has he gone too far?
Yeah. For most normal people, absolutely. I mean, but he's only getting, he's getting a minority in the Republican primaries, but the process is it keeps him alive. I mean, he finished, first or second in Iowa, but he got fifth in New Hampshire, and he was a distant second in Florida. And in most traditional years, that would be enough as a fringe candidate to kill you.
Right, but not this year.
But not this year. And so I think you need to look at his, percentage of the vote. I had a client that was thinking about running for president and decided not to, which kind of shows he maybe should be president. And we did a survey in Iowa of both Republicans and Democrats because there's crossover stuff you can do. And in the state of Iowa, what I can safely say about caucus goers is they are nuts. Like half the Republicans didn't think Barack Obama was a native, and half the Democrats thought that George Bush was complicit in 9/11. So there's birthers and truthers, and that kind of, I think part of this is, I think it's accelerating, but part of it was kind of smoothed over because you had two adults in Hillary and Obama in 08 for the Democrats. But, people out there are angry and crazy.
And I do want to pick up on that, but I'm thinking you're both media strategists, but you get intimately involved in campaigns. And even going back to you, Chris, does someone like you have the kind of clout and authority to go to a candidate like a Santorum or like a Mitt Romney that keeps talking about the trees of Michigan and to say, stop it, stop saying these things?
The trees of Michigan thing, and my friend Mark McKinnon, who did George Bush's two campaigns, and who's now looking for a third party, he called it a "I like lamp" moment, which I think was perfect. And you can't stop somebody from having a misspeak because he's giving 10 speeches a day, and so you're going to freak.
What do you think, Neil?
Well, I mean, I agree with Chris. I mean, you, there's a difference between just misspeaking or saying something a little goofy and what Santorum is doing. I mean, clearly, evidently, Santorum does not read text. He does notes. And, Marty, I believe that Rick Santorum believes all this stuff. I don't mean he's crazy. He's not crazy. I think he's passionately conservative, not severely conservative like Mitt Romney. He's passionately conservative, and he has certain core value beliefs. And so it does come from someplace. And yet, you've had John Brabender on your show, who is a media consultant who literally helped to make Santorum in Pittsburgh. If anybody can control him, it's Brabender, and he hasn't been able to do it.
Well, let's take a short break, and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Neil Oxman, head of the campaign group. Also with us, Chris Mottola, head of Chris Mottola Consulting Incorporated. We are talking about the race for the White House with two media strategists and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Chemical Heritage Foundation, library, museum, center for scholars, supports WHYY. This first Friday, CHF opens a new exhibition, Inspiring Youth in Chemistry. The exhibit showcases art exploring our chemical world by young people from around the globe. Visitors are invited to meet the curators and take part in chemistry experiments on Friday, March 2nd from 5 to 8 p.m. For more information and tour schedules, details are available online at chemheritage.org/firstfridays.
Later this week, Google will make changes to its privacy policy. It will start collecting what you search for, phone numbers you call, and even your location. That has many users up in arms, and they're asking if there's anything they can do to stop Google from knowing too much. We will have the answer next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Rutgers Camden supports WHYY and will host a reading by author Stacy Cordery Wednesday, March 7th at 6:30 p.m. Cordery is the author of the first full-scale biography of Juliet Gordon Lowe, who founded the Girl Scouts 100 years ago. Open to the public with no tickets required, the reading will be held in the Campus Center on the Rutgers Camden campus. For details on Stacy Cordery Wednesday, March 7th at 6:30 p.m., camden.rutgers.edu.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We are getting analysis on the presidential race this year from two media strategists who are friendly rivals. Neil Oxman works for Democratic candidates. Chris Mottola works for Republican candidates. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I do want to talk about some ads and also play some ads as well. But Neil, let me go to you. And I'm wondering, how much have super PACs change the advertising landscape, not just for you, but for all of us?
Well, completely. They're the total wild card for this year. And so far, the super PACs have spent more money running advertisements in the Republican primaries than all the candidates put together, because I think, as your listeners know, you're limited to about giving each candidate $2,500 in a primary and $2,500 in a general election. And you can't give corporately. A super PAC can take $10 million mythically from Exxon, or $10 million from Shelley Adelson, who owns the Venetian Hotel and is one of the 20th wealthiest men in the United States, who continues to fund Newt Gingrich. So, I think that you could literally see in the general election $500 million spent on each side, the Republicans and the Democrats, where between Labor Day and Election Day, the campaigns will be truly like Pepsi and Coke and McDonald's and the Ford dealers and Apple, because you will have hundreds of millions of dollars spent, because it's easy when a corporation can give money or an individual can give millions of dollars.
But are you troubled, Chris, because what we're talking about is our wealthy people, some millionaires, some even billionaires, who can give unlimited funds to the candidate of their choice? Does that concern you? With some, you're a media strategist. Obviously, you want your candidate to win. But even beyond that, does that concern you?
Oh, I think it's awful. And Neil and I have talked about this. We think the best model would be, I think the best model would be unlimited hard money with 24-hour disclosure. I mean, I don't need to know when a Coke or a Soros is making a contribution or an investment. People are pretty smart enough to figure that out. But the problem is that it can be hidden. Newt Gingrich has taken like $11, $12 million of super PAC money. Santorum, I think it's three or something, mm-hmm. but it's kept their candidacies alive. Mm-hmm. Republicans, we think that we are going to get outspent in the general election by Obama by $1 billion.
Wow. And a billion in part from wealthy donors?
Yeah, half super PACs, half labor.
But, Neil, it seems to me the lie about these super PACs is they're not supposed to coordinate with campaigns, but we know who works on right. whose campaign, who now works on the super PAC.
And even if they don't, the super PACs hire – if the super PAC hired Chris Mottola, and Chris really wasn't talking to the Romney campaign, let's say, because Mitt Romney – because he really wanted to draw a line between them, a wall, so he didn't get in trouble in any way. Chris is smart, and he can figure out what the campaign is about. And he's smart enough to do what he has to do to attack Barack Obama without talking to the Romney campaign. So there are enough smart people who do what we do in this business around the country that you can figure it out. As long as the Supreme Court said that in the Citizens United case that this is free speech, that corporations have a right to free speech like this, and you can do this. And I've always been a strict constructionist of the First Amendment, but this did trouble me. And it will, unless this changes, and the only way it can change is a constitutional amendment at this point, given what the Supreme Court did, unless the Supreme Court really does change with three new members. You're going to have this for a long time going forward. And in, for instance, Karl Rove's Crossroads, right. his super PAC, they'll spend $50 or $100 million on Republican Senate candidates around the country, the same where labor will get together on the Democratic Senate candidates. And so the majority of money you will see this fall as a consumer in America, in any state that you live where there's a contested Senate race or when you see presidential spots, will not be candidate-driven. They will be super PAC-driven.
Wow. You want to add something?
Yeah.
And then I do want to play a couple of ads.
Sure. Neil's absolutely right. you know, if upon leaving your studio, Neil and I were renditioned and shot up with morphine for a week, and you could drop us in any congressional district, any state in the country, and within 2 days, we would have a super PAC up and running, and it's easy because, you know, if you're trying to figure out what to do, sure, you go to the candidate's website because it's all there.
No mystery there.
No mystery. No.
Let me play a couple of ads, and it almost feels like ancient history because of the campaigns have moved on and are looking to Super Tuesday. But this is a Mitt Romney ad, and it did run in Michigan. And let's listen.
Is Rick Santorum ready to be president? He's never run a business. He's never run a state. A Washington politician who proudly voted for the bridge to nowhere. And for liberal Judge Sotomayor, Santorum opposed creating E-Verify, a conservative reform to curb illegal immigration.
It is a moral imperative for America to stop spending more money than we take in.
It's killing jobs. The experience of balancing budgets is desperately needed in Washington, and I will take it there.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Is that a good ad, Neil?
It's okay. I mean, it is what it is. It's interesting. I think you know in Florida that between the Romney campaign and the Super PAC, 99.5% of the spots were negative. One half of 1% of the spots were positive, and they were in Spanish. And I'm not exaggerating. You can look it up. In Michigan, the overwhelming majority of Romney spots were negative as well.
Interesting. Well, let me play a Santorum ad again. This ran in Michigan. Let's listen.
Who's on the side of Michigan workers? Not Romney. He supported the Wall Street bailouts while turning his back on Michigan workers. But Rick Santorum's Made in the USA plan changes everything. It cuts taxes for Michigan manufacturers to zero, so we can bring back American jobs from overseas. It also cuts taxes for all workers and cuts $5 trillion in spending over 5 years, balancing the federal budget. Rick Santorum, he's fighting for us.
I'm Rick Santorum, and I approve this message.
So, Chris, do negative ads work? And do wall-to-wall negative ads work?
Negative ads definitely work, or else we wouldn't run them.
But you know that? You know that from research?
Yeah,
you can tell.
We know from research. We know when, you know, I put 1,500 points behind, or when somebody sees a negative spot 10 to 15 times, you can see the impact. Mm. The back-to-back-to-back stuff mitigates it, especially if you're stuck in the middle.
You mean literally in the middle of those
ads?
Yeah.
So it's like if you're like spot number three and six spots in a row, you kind of which is what you're going to see, by the way, in Pennsylvania this fall.
And maybe this spring. I don't know for the primary.
Yeah, primary should be interesting. I mean, I don't think it gets that far because I think these guys run out of money. You know, I think Santorum and Gingrich just run out of money, and people aren't going to continue to double down on them.
Do negative ads, and I realize negative ads, Neil, come in many different flavors.
Right. Sure. They work at certain points. I mean, although I didn't look every ad, but Chris is right. I mean, usually the local breaks are 2 minutes long so that you can run 4 30-second commercials. Sometimes locally they'll run 5 commercials, and it's really about inventory with the TV stations. Of course, the local TV stations are ecstatic about this primary going on because
the money they make, and these are
driven for profits. They're not, you know, not for profits. But it would be interesting to see in the middle of that if you saw just a quiet ad for Santorum where he looked in the camera and said, you know, you're hearing a lot of crazy noise out there, but this is what I think my plan can do for Michigan. Instead of having a voiceover spot do it, which began with negative against Romney, he just quietly said, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to cut $5 trillion out of the federal budget and balance the federal budget in 5 years. I'm going to do this, this, and this quietly. I'm Rick Santorum, and I approve this message because I'm just as scared as you are about what my family in America faces. You know, that kind of can really work as well, especially because of the cacophony of all the screaming that goes on out there.
And we don't do ads on public radio or WHYY, but do you do radio spots? Are radio spots effective, Chris? Or is it more TV-driven or maybe even Internet-driven?
If you're a Republican consultant, you know that the quickest way home in a Republican primary is to buy Fox News and to buy conservative talk. And in the state of Florida, for instance, which I do a lot of work in, roughly 50% of Republican primary voters are habituates. They watch Fox News every night, and they listen to conservative talk during the day.
So you hit, and they're probably skewed a little bit older?
Yeah, they're skewed a little. I mean, everybody in Florida is skewed a little older, but they're skewed older, and they're skewed more conservative, and they're skewed more wealthy.
And you know that, and that's how you target them. Fox and probably Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, and let me tell you, you want to own a conservative talk radio station in Florida or be a cable company with Fox News because it's a license to print money.
And Marty, and I know it's NPR, and I am a gigantic supporter nationally and locally of NPR.
That.
But if given what given the people who listen to WHYY in Delaware and in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, if Bill Morazzo could start charging for ads, the fact that it tends to be a station of upscale, not totally upscale, but people who vote. I mean, it's not 14-year-olds listening to the station. It's 30-year-olds who vote. The amount of money per 30-second ad HYY could charge, and every candidate in the world would do it, would advertise, because we know that everybody who's listening right now is a little more likely to vote than less likely to vote. I mean, you're not seeing a lot of TV ads on Nickelodeon. You're seeing them on Lifetime or Fox News or something, simply because we know from all the research we do, and we spend a lot of money on research, that's where voters are.
And that's Neil Oxman, head of the campaign group, joining us along with Chris Mottola, head of Chris Mottola Consulting Incorporated. And they are both political media strategists, friendly rivals, as I have said. And they have joined us in times past talking about elections. And it's a fascinating election year. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499, 1-888-477-WHYY. Of course, the Republican race for presidential nomination has many dramatic twists and turns. Let's see what Rob from Roxborough has to say. And Rob, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi. How
are
you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm a Republican, but I'm a Ron Paul supporter. But I'll tell you, I got to say, I think sort of Santorum won this one in Michigan, because if you factor out the early voting, I think Santorum clearly made up lost ground and forged ahead. And I think it's exactly because of the stuff he said that everyone says is outrageous. So I don't think he's going to pivot. I think if he's smart, he'll stay on track, because although a lot of people find the stuff he says outrageous, I think it's got a real charisma to it. And it really, presses buttons. I feel the meme pressed in me. And so I'd never vote for him. I don't really like Santorum, but I got to say, I think he's on to something. So,
You know what, Rob? Let me take your call, because I think it's an interesting one. And even as the election begins to move south, looking at the Super Tuesday primaries and caucuses next week, do you think Rob and Santorum are on to something?
I think Santorum's body language, what I call political body language, is wrong on it. But I think that the message resonates. Instead of talking about, like, Satan's afoot, I think saying that there is good and evil in this world, and we have to be for good, and not saying that everything is relative and all values are relative, is something that, frankly, resonates with most voters. And I think number two, not saying about, that Obama's a snob because he wants everybody to go to college, but there's a great show, I think it's called Dirty Work, there's a guy, the host of that, did this great thing on TED TV about, how people look down their nose at people that do real jobs. And if you look at right now in the construction trades, in a lot of places, there are no people to work them. Mm-hmm. And it's $100,000 to $150,000 a year job. And so there's a kernel of truth in what he says, but he's saying it in a way that you just shut it down.
Well, and here's a guy who has multiple degrees, saying that the president is a snob because he wants people to get more education.
I understand what Rob's saying. I mean, it's interesting. I will always watch the Sunday morning talk shows if Santorum is on. If Romney's on, I'm completely indifferent. And remember, this is a choice among four people for Republicans. Ron Paul, who's stuck at 10 or 15%. Gingrich, who doesn't seem to be in the conversation anymore. Santorum, who's clearly more charismatic than Romney, but says some goofy things once in a while and can get his back up. And then Romney, who is presidential, but is out of sync once in a while. And
out of sync meaning just instead of saying his
wife drives two American-made cars, he says his wife drives two Cadillac CTSs or whatever those things are called. I mean, which are whatever they are, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000. It's not exactly the way. Or as somebody said in the newspaper the other day, he should stop calling guys sport. I mean, you know, it is that split. There are three sort of groups in the Republican primary. You have real Tea Party libertarian folks. You have the country club. I mean, you have libertarians who Ron Paul. You have country club Republicans who Romney does. And then you have sort of Tea Party people out there who right now seem to be a much larger group of people than the old country club Republicans. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's one disconnect out there that's going on nationally that's really interesting. If you've looked at USA Today, which is one of the two or three largest circulation newspapers in America, the front page the last couple of weeks they've had head-to-head matchups, Santorum, Obama, Romney, Obama. Romney for 2 weeks in a row, USA / Gallup poll. So this is not some homegrown poll. Gallup is co-sponsoring this poll or doing the poll for USA Today. Romney's been ahead of Obama, and Santorum has crept within a point or a point ahead of Obama. So, I mean, I don't think it's such a wild card for guys like Rob to think this guy's charismatic and says him. The question is, can he not do the last 10 or 15% goofiness that he does because he has a chip on his shoulder, or because he's angry, because he's a punk, or whatever he is, because he has to make the point.
Well, I also was reading, Chris, that President Obama's popularity has gone up among women. Women tend to vote a little bit more than men, but perhaps are just more of us. As media strategists, do you think in terms of gender that there's a message for men and there's a message for women? And you think of women as a prized voter because they're more likely to vote?
The percentage is not
that dramatic.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that back in the 80s, there used to be a huge gender gap between Democrats and Republicans. That's really kind of vanished. It changes from election to election. You know, frankly, men are likely to decide earlier. Women are likely to get the message first.
Oh.
I mean, that's been my experience, yeah.
Well, I mean, the gender, with all due respect, Chris, the gender gap was there in 08 and 10. I mean, you know, men supported Republicans more than women did. And even though 10 was a wipeout for us and 8 was a wipeout for you guys, and certainly when we're doing campaigns, we do look – we have a column. And the column will say, you know, Mottola, Moscowane at the top and the left and the right. And other than Democrat and Republican at the top to see how they're voting, the next group is gender, male and female. And we see how the split is between. And certainly when you're a media buyer, you're a media company, you can make a big distinction whether you're buying sports or you're buying Lifetime movies or whatever it is you're going to buy so that you can – unless you have an unlimited amount of money.
And we're almost up on a break here, but is contraception being opposed to contraception, is that a risky thing to do in 2012, Neil?
When by every poll I've seen, the overwhelming majority of Catholics say at some point in their life they use birth control, I don't know why he continues to talk about it.
And he is, of course, Rick Santorum. And that's Neil Oxman, head of the campaign group. Also with us, Chris Mottola, head of Chris Mottola Consulting Incorporated. They are both political media strategists. We are dissecting the race for the White House, looking at the Republicans duking it out, and also talking about President Obama as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
The Art and Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Cyrano. The most legendary nose in literature gets a makeover with this American adaptation of the French classic. Will Roxanne fall for Christian's dashing looks or Cyrano's daring poetry? Find out in this play full of wordplay and swordplay, one of the greatest love stories of all time. Cyrano at the Arden Theater, March 8th through April 15th. Details online at ardentheater.org or 215-922-1122.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Google has a new privacy policy. What do users need to know? Also, President Obama hosts a state dinner for a handful of Iraq war vets. But one of the invitees asks, what about something more? We'll get into the debate over having a parade for Iraq war veterans. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Abington Memorial Hospital supports WHYY and offers new technology that can permanently repair a condition commonly known as a hole in the heart. It develops when a small hole that helps circulate blood to an unborn baby doesn't close. Interventional cardiologists are using a self-expandable double umbrella made from wire mesh and polyester fabric to close the defect without surgery. The implanted device becomes a permanent part of the wall of the heart. To learn more, amh.org/heart.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we're getting a Republican and Democratic perspective on the race for the White House. Neil Oxman works for Democratic candidates as a media strategist. Chris Mottola works for Republican candidates also as a media strategist. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me play one more ad, and this is a very interesting ad. We actually faded out about halfway through it, and it's in favor of Newt Gingrich. Let's listen.
Mitt Romney.
I looked at Mitt Romney's record. I can't figure out what he stands for. It changes. I just don't relate to Romney.
I really don't know if I can trust him.
He doesn't have the strength to stand up against Obama.
Newt Gingrich can beat Obama.
Not everyone in Washington likes Newt, but maybe that's a good thing. He got things done.
I thought, this is my kind of guy. I want somebody that will fight for our beliefs. Newt's that guy.
Newt's smart. We need smart.
This is a really serious time.
It's been tough.
And that ad continues, and it's a pro-Newt Gingrich ad. Why do you think, Chris, Gingrich has kind of fallen out of the top tier in this race for the nomination?
Well, I've got to preface my remarks by saying Newt Gingrich tried to get me fired in 1984, and it's only because, you know, the Republican leader hated Newt Gingrich that I wasn't fired, because anything Newt wanted, he was not going to agree with.
With that caveat, then?
Because he comes off like a jerk. I mean, you would not want to be in a room with this guy. I mean, he's certainly has interesting things to say. He has interesting ideas. He thinks big and all over the map. But he's undisciplined. He's not particularly a hard worker. He's not detail-oriented. And, you know, if you want to run for president, you need to be a hard worker, detail-oriented, and disciplined.
And how do you see his candidacy, Neil? Well, we'll get back to our callers.
There was clearly an opening after South Carolina for him to sort of to be the conservative alternative to Romney, and it failed in Florida. And after that, he's not been in the conversation because conservative voters have moved on. He will. The assumption is next Tuesday, quote Super Tuesday, he will win Georgia. The question is, since he's not on the ballot in Virginia, can he fight and do, what can he do something in Tennessee? Can he do something in Oklahoma? Can he survive next week? If you looked at last night's coverage, wall to wall coverage on CNN and MSNBC. In 3 hours of coverage, there wasn't 5 minutes of Newt Gingrich talk. And so the more that happens, the fact that he got whatever he got, 6 or 8% in Arizona or something, and 10 or 12 or 15%, it just makes him a parenthesis, because Republicans want to vote for somebody they think can beat Obama. And Republicans right now don't think Newt Gingrich can beat Barack Obama.
But do you think he had appeal when there were all those debates?
Absolutely.
And he would go after John King and the questioners. Absolutely. And
I mean,
no.
He was great before South Carolina. He had those moments, and he was great. And if he had kept that on, he would be where Santorum is right now. But he didn't, and he misstepped, and you know, he is where he is.
He's also had $11 million in super PAC money. And you never go wrong in a primary playing beat the press.
It's a big target, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like playing to the cheap seats.
But it works.
Yeah,
at least it works.
No,
temporarily.
It works rhetorically. I mean, you know, because I think if you're in a crowd of conservatives or crowd of liberals, beating up on the media is the easiest place to go.
The defining parts of the Republican, other than super PAC money, the defining things until a month ago, and actually till last Wednesday night when they had that debate before yesterday's primaries, the defining things in the Republican primaries have clearly been the debates. They have been the defining moments of the campaign. Rick Perry self-destructed because he
couldn't
was
remember
clearly
things.
Not presidential. People decided this guy can't be the president of the United States. You have to have a little more going on there.
And by the way, sorry to interrupt you. you know, if you look at the commercials Perry ran, the campaign he constructed, the talent he had on board, where he was positioned ideologically, you know, also with Latino voters, he was the perfect vehicle. But, you know, he melted down and consistently melted down, and that was it.
Let me see what Holly from Bucks County has to say. And Holly, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Nice to talk with you again.
Nice to have you on. Go ahead.
I'm a therapist up here, and there was 2 years in a row where I had a job requirement that I attend a political breakfast. I was fairly new back in the state, so I really didn't know any of the people there. And we had some of our clients, addictions clients, sharing their experiences, and there were some mental health clients there also,
yeah,
and a bunch of us therapists. And Rick Santorum, I had to ask someone who he was because I was so put off by him. He just sat there looking smug and arrogant, and I was just grateful that none of my own personal clients were a part of this.
So,
because, pardon me?
No, I was going to say, it sounds like not a good first impression for you, Holly.
Very poor. And then he did the same thing a year later. And the political breakfast had to do with my profession trying to get the government to allot funding.
Well, you know what, Holly, let me take your point and actually toss it to both of our guests here. And Neil, I mean, first impressions, whether it's a political person or not, can have lifelong consequences.
Sure, absolutely. And as we were talking about, Chris was talking about, Rick Perry's first impression during the debates was not good, and he was gone. He was perfectly positioned to be. I mean, if you looked at all these guys other than Romney, Rick Perry should be the Republican nominee for President of the United States. Governor of Texas, lot of money, good campaign structure. You know, 10 years. I mean,
but he didn't know,
you know,
very
Mitt
much.
Romney was governor for one term in Massachusetts. Rick Perry's been governor of the second biggest state. You know, Texas is the second biggest state in America now.
Right.
It's bigger than New York, 25 right. million people, with every demographic subgroup and every problem that you can have. And he's been a pretty reasonable governor of Texas. And so then he gets introduced to America in a real way. And it's like, who is this? He's like a Saturday Night Live character. He's almost a caricature of himself.
But it shows you, Chris, just once you get on that national stage, that criteria. I mean, and it should goes up. I mean, being governor even of the second biggest state in the country is not like being president of the United States.
And I think people underestimate. And by the way, I kind of like the idea of like mental health and a political breakfast. I think they go hand in hand.
Well, I was concerned that it was a job requirement to go to the breakfast.
Yeah, that was
that's a whole other issue.
I think you need to have your head examined to go to a political breakfast, but that's just me. But I think people underestimate the spotlight that these guys are under. And when I say guys, I mean, you know, people that run for office. I mean, it's 24/7. And, you know, if you followed any one of us around for, you know, 12 hours and recorded everything we said, I guarantee you we say 20 stupid,
sure,
terrible things a day.
Sure.
But having that repeated and repeated over and over on the news, and it becomes an event, and then people say, well, they're not being real and they're scripted. Of course you are, because, you know, like you wake up every day doing a campaign and you say, please don't let me screw up.
Mm. And as strategists, you're worried, don't you screw up, right?
Yeah, every time.
Your clients.
No matter how good somebody is, and I've had guys that have been, you know, challenged, I've had guys that have been great. At the same time, every time they do a debate or do a public event, you go,
Look locally. We did J.J. Balaban in my office was the lead guy who did Arlen Specter's primary against Joe Sesak's primary against Arlen Specter, and Chris was one of the people doing Arlen, and we won that. One of the reasons we won is because Specter did a TV interview with Fox 29 at 30th Street Station and said in sort of a smug way, you know, I changed my party to get reelected. And he said, we didn't change it. He said it in this smug, ridiculous way. And Arlen Specter, who's longest serving senator in Pennsylvania history and one of the longest serving senators in the history of the United States of America, in the top 3% or something, who doesn't make mistakes like that, we put that on TV and he dropped 2 points a day. I mean, we were what, 18 points down with 12 days ago and won by 8 or something. It was a 20, simply because people looked at that and decided, oh, my Lord.
The way he said it, and even, it was even more pronounced than that. And, of course, we put it
on twice in a 30-second right. commercial.
Right. But is that fair? Is all fair in love and war and media strategy?
I had a candidate, one of my – talk about bitter disappointments – in 1992, I did a candidate named Rod Chandler running against Patty Murray, who's kind of known in the Senate as the senator from Dumb.
She's the senator of Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State. And we were killing her. And Chandler was a moderate, respected congressman, and he had – we killed her. There were like three debates. We killed her in the debates. There was one televised one, and we destroyed her until it came time for the close. And Rod Chandler went blank, and he sang.
He sang?
He sang.
Oh, my goodness.
He said, and he sang the dang me, they ought to get a tree and hang me. Hang me from the highest tree. Woman, will you weep for me? And then he clicked back in, and I remember, like, watching it, and, like, I felt like the Wicked Witch of the West. I'm like, I'm melting.
Why did you do that?
He just went blank, and... You know, and people are going, you know, putting hands in his face and, like, cards and, like, come on. And he just did the first thing that came to his mind.
Wow.
And, you know, and we had a small lead.
Well,
and
horrible. I'm sure you both have stories to tell. Go ahead, Neil.
This is public, so I'm allowed to tell it. But when Bill Green ran for the United States Senate against John Hines, this mayor, who's a friend of mine, I worked on his campaign. They, you know, at these debates, they have people who usually hold up cards with how much time is left. 30 seconds, 15 seconds, because you only get a limited amount of time. And in the middle of this debate, the woman – it was a televised debate. The woman holding up the card, it was starting to really annoy Green. And so he goes something like, stop holding up. I mean, just absolutely snapped in the middle of the thing. Well, John Hines wins the United States Senate race. Everybody has those moments. And when we get together, that's the stories we like to tell. But first impressions are if Rick Santorum, starting last night with his speech, which was almost like an acceptance speech, even though he lost by 3%, stays on that message and doesn't get goofy, this thing could drag out just a little bit more than Mitt Romney wants.
And the Super Tuesday primaries tend to take the country to the south, Oklahoma, I'm not sure where.
Well, there's also Massachusetts
and
Vermont.
So exactly.
Romney supposedly wins Massachusetts and Vermont. Right. No one knows what the three small state caucuses will do. Romney wins Michigan because he's really the only guy on the ballot. But the real fight is Georgia, Tennessee, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. to see what happens in those places.
Well, and I'm wondering, Chris, do you and other strategists, do you have a Southern strategy, as has been talked about for particular candidates in the past?
No. I mean, because, the process has been elongated. The other thing, too, that's changed, that's made it more difficult for Romney to wrap it up, is that now in these states, it used to be winner-take-all. You would win Michigan, you would get all the delegates. Now it's proportional. And so you kind of win Michigan, and you get a couple delegates, and Santorum gets a couple mm-hmm. delegates, and Gingrich. I mean, it's all spread out, which makes it much tougher to, you know. And again, we're not too far away, and you know, Rick Santorum has 83 delegates. You know, Mitt
not
Romney's
that far behind.
164, 165, and you need roughly 1,100 to win.
Neil, let me roll back the clock to the race between candidate Obama and candidate Clinton, which did go on pretty much through the spring into June. Do you see parallels with what's going on in the Republican Party today, or is that just totally different political dynamic?
I think the different dynamic there, Marty, was that I don't think either Obama or Clinton – were making it a race every day about how far left they could be. The problem, I think, with the Republicans is that they're making both Santorum and Romney continue to sort of say where every speech is, who's more, the spots that you just played, which one is more conservative. Well, America isn't that far right or that far left. America is in the middle. And one of the one of the things that the chattering classes have been talking about lately is that when you look at the polls in the last month among independent voters, both Santorum and Romney's favorables have dropped considerably among independent voters. They've gone from having a ratio of being more favorable to less to being more unfavorable. And so now there's a long time to get it back. And I mean, the election is 35 weeks away from this coming Tuesday, and that's forever. The election is after the next World Series, and we haven't started baseball.
But there's YouTube, though. I mean, it seems that people can be haunted forever from past statements.
No, you certainly can. But you mean, Barack Obama has one bad thing he has to deal with in the sense that he has the world to deal with. There are 9 more Fridays where the unemployment rate will be announced. They're announced on the first Friday of the month, unless the first Friday of the month is the first. Right. There are 9 more Fridays where the unemployment rate will be announced. He's got, you know, is Israel going to strike, just to strike Iran? I mean, you've got all this craziness in the world, and that doesn't – then you have Santorum and Romney on the outside versus those guys there. Does the market go from 13,000 to 8,000 and people feel that? Is there – so, there, you know, it's a long way away.
Let me ask you, Chris, because it has been a bruising campaign, and it does feel as if some of the critiques the candidates have for each other are personal. Is it personal in a campaign?
Yeah, I mean, it's always personal. I mean, I don't think these guys like each other because, you know, culturally, you know, Paul, Gingrich, Santorum, and Romney are 4 different animals. And I think it kind of exacerbates it. But honestly, I'm not that worried about, you know, them rehabilitating themselves. Mm-hmm. As I always like to point out, you know, on September 14th in 2008, John McCain was leading Barack Obama. So,
and then the Lehman Brothers meltdown happened, and he melted down.
Yeah.
Well, to be continued, as always, always an interesting conversation when we have the two of you together. Neil Oxman, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
And Chris Mottola, thank you very much as well.
Always a pleasure.
And Neil Oxman, head of the campaign group here in Philadelphia. Chris Mottola, head of Chris Mottola Consulting Incorporated. As I said several times during this hour, they each work for the two different parties and a friendly rivalry they have between them. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us in this first hour. We'll be back right after this very short break.